next matter on calendar today is In re David Oren Nilsen. It's here on a certified question from the bankruptcy court, case number 61070. Is counsel ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. On behalf of the what would be the appellant? Yes, John Murtha. Good afternoon. I am not going to spend much time on the facts because I am sure you're all fully familiar with the facts, and actually they are fairly simple. The highlights are a family in a home, they go through a divorce, husband leaves, wife remains in the property, in the house with the children. Several years later, husband files bankruptcy and seeks to establish a homestead exemption for that residence, notwithstanding the fact that he no longer resides in that residence. He wants to claim a vicarious, if you will, homestead by reason of the fact that the children of the marriage are residing in the property with the mother. I do acknowledge that I bear the burden in this particular matter. The question presented is, does a debtor have to actually reside on the property that is the subject of the claim homestead exemption under 21 NRS 21.0901L and NRS Chapter 115, or is it sufficient that a debtor's minor children reside on the property in order to qualify for the exemption?
Isn't an important aspect of that question as to whether or not there was a homestead exemption filed?
I believe that is an important question, Your Honor. The reason that I don't know that the failure to file the homestead exemption is necessarily a slam dunk for my side is that under bankruptcy, as of the date of the petition, and the Matley versus Myers case, if the debtor had the right to claim a homestead exemption, let's say, for example, the debtor was residing in the property, he or she could still file a homestead declaration. There's not been one filed in this case, and my position is, because there had not been a declaration previously, and because as of the date of the petition, which is the date that we really have to test this, the debtor was not residing in the property, and my view of the Nevada law and the cases interpreting the homestead exemption all require residency before you can file that homestead declaration.
But you would acknowledge, Mr. Murtha, that if the court disagreed with you, the debtor in this case has a right to file the late homestead declaration.
Yes, I would have to acknowledge that, Your Honor. Right. If you were to disagree with my view that the debtor would have the right to file a declaration of homestead, and my view, and I would submit that under the Nevada homestead statutes, the debtor must actually reside. While the exemption statutes are to be liberally construed, we're all very familiar with the cases that have said that exemptions do not exist under common law and that they are extended or limited by the statutes creating them. And I think that's important here because we have no provision in Chapter 115 or 21090 that specifically provides for the exemption to be claimed under the circumstances in this case. It simply doesn't exist. I cited a case in my brief from Florida. Florida does have a provision that says, or the family. And there are other states that have similar provisions. Nevada does not. And I think that's important, once again, because of the nature of exemptions and where they come from. And they come from the statutory provisions.
You rely quite heavily on the McGill case in your brief, and then you acknowledge that the statutes have been amended between 1941 and today. Are there any material amendments or changes between the version at issue in McGill and what we have today?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe there have been any material amendments. There have been amendments, but I don't believe the language that required the residency, which was the failure in the McGill case, to have been changed. And there have been cases that have dealt with residency since then that have specifically said that residency is a requirement. A bankruptcy case, Judge Zive said it's axiomatic that residency is required. And I don't think
if McGill controls, why was the question certified? Was there briefing on whether this even needed to be certified, or did we have mandatory Nevada precedent already?
You know, Honor, I was not representing the trustee at the time the briefing was filed in the bankruptcy court. I don't believe that that issue was ever argued or specifically briefed.
I was wondering if there was some distinction that we didn't know.
No, nothing that I'm aware of.
Thank you.
So,
unless one were to extend the homestead exemption to a parent whose children remain in the home.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm having a tough
time. Unless we were to extend the homestead exemption to a parent whose children remained in the home. And I recognize that the language in the statute doesn't necessarily encompass that. But could you address that argument that's been made in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. I think there's a couple of arguments. Most of the arguments in this case are policy. I mean, clearly. First of all, I'm wondering if that is not not better the province of the legislature to make those decisions. And one of my concerns is unintended consequences. In this particular case, we know that the value of the property and the equity is below the $550,000 exempt amount. But let's assume for a moment that we have a case with $1 million equity. Would it not be an opportune time for a husband and wife who are otherwise suffering financial difficulties to go through a divorce and one reside on the property with the children and one not reside on the property and double the exemption? Because the wife could claim the exemption, she's there with the children. And in that example I gave, the wife still remaining on the property. And then the husband, because the children are still on the property, claiming it equally. I just don't know if it's possible for us at this level to legislate in all of the special requirements that might be necessary were we to take that approach.
Mr. Van Meter, in thinking of various scenarios, kind of like you brought up, wouldn't the husband have had the right, assuming the husband bought another property, to file his own declaration of homestead on that separate piece of property, assuming it was his personal residence and all, after the divorce and all, when he's living separate and apart?
Yes, he could, and as a matter of fact, that did occur in this case. It's not a stick-built home, but he is residing and was residing on the day of the petition in a travel trailer at a location in Sparks, Nevada, and on his bankruptcy statements and schedules, he tried to exempt that as well under 210901M, not 1L, and 1L is the one at issue in this particular case.
Well, generally, you can't have two homesteads. I mean, you only have one, can't you?
That is correct, Your Honor. There's a case out of the Ninth Circuit in Ray Rowe that basically dealt with a situation where a husband and wife were trying to claim two separate homesteads, and the Ninth Circuit says you cannot do that under Nevada's homestead exemptions.
What actually happens in this case? Because Kelly's filed the homestead for this particular piece of property.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Kelly, his ex-wife has filed the homestead, so her interest is protected. Now, what happens if we find in your favor? What happens? What's the bottom line here?
Okay. You're correct. The wife did file the declaration of homestead shortly before the husband filed bankruptcy. If you rule in my favor, her homestead is protected. The property is sold. The debtor's half interest in the property would be available to pay his creditors. If his creditors are owed $50,000 in his equity, would have been $100,000, $50,000 would go to pay creditors, $50,000 would go to the debtor.
But the house has to be sold, is what you're saying?
Pardon me?
The house has to be sold?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. This is a Chapter 13 case, and the debtor can provide for payment of the non-exempt property to go to his creditors. So under his Chapter 13 plan, if he's capable, he can provide for the full payment of his creditors to avoid selling the house. But if he can't do that, then that is a possibility. That's always been a possibility.
Can he withdraw his homestead on the other home that he has and just move back in to protect this property so it won't be sold?
Your Honor, that's always a possibility. I don't know that that's a reality because of the what appears to be the continued acrimony between the husband and the wife.
Well, he couldn't
couldn't do that post-petition anyway, could he, Mr. Murtha?
That is correct, Your Honor, now that you mentioned
it. The measuring stick is the petition date.
The measuring is the petition date. That is correct. I'm sorry, Your Honor. So, no, he would not be able to remedy that, I don't believe, by moving in today.
What's the basis of that, though?
Pardon?
When you say post-petition date, tell me. I'm not familiar with that issue.
The petition date is the date that the bankruptcy was filed, and as I recall, it was August 16th, somewhere around there, 2011. So that's the date that you test under the bankruptcy law what exemptions exist. And with Nevada, we all know that even if you have property that qualifies to be exempt as a homestead, if you don't file the declaration, you don't have that homestead. That's the Lockman case from many, many, many years ago. And we didn't have that here. We didn't have any declaration of homestead. And with that, unless there's other questions that need to be answered right now, I'd reserve the balance of my time. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Christopher Burke for Mr. Nelson. Mr. Nelson isn't looking for anything more than he's entitled to, a simple homestead. Mr. Nelson has what at the time he filed was a $7,000 travel trailer. He's chosen to live in that rather than force the sale of the home, which he has been entitled to since 2008. Now, I'm not asking the court to rewrite the statute. I'm just asking the court to follow the law. And under the law, Mr. Nelson can exempt this property. Why? It's a dwelling house situated on some land. His family lives there. He lived there 11 years. Divorce forced him out.
But Mr. Burke, my recollection is that when you do a declaration of homestead, the declarant must certify that the declarant lives on the property, not that third parties live in there. Am I incorrect on that?
The declaration does say that, is residing on it. We're talking about here constructive occupancy. Okay. You can have residence either actually or constructively. And when somebody lives there for 11 years, the divorce forces him out, and the family's still there, his blood is still there, he's paying on the second mortgage, he hasn't homesteaded another property. If anything, he's been a good father, and he hasn't said, sell it, give me my half, I'll homestead it, then I'll file bankruptcy. Instead, he's trying to protect the children. And to answer Judge Cherry's question, if you don't allow him to exempt it, he's going to have to sell it because his creditors are high enough that he can't pay it in a 13-year, Chapter 13, through his salary. He needs the money from the homestead to pay it.
So Mr. Burke, that might be the consequence. And as unfortunate or troublesome as it might be, the question is, under the statute, that we're required to interpret, where in the statute does your client meet the terms of the statute?
Because if we look at 115.020.2c, it talks about a claimant. A and B talk about married people. C, any claimant, that this is his or her intention to use and claim the property as a homestead. It doesn't say he has to reside there.
So your point is, under this paragraph C, that your client is any claimant, and he could file a declaration and satisfy the statute if he said, it is my intention to use and claim the property as a homestead, and you would say putting your children in there is using and claiming that as a homestead.
Correct.
That's your argument?
Correct.
Okay.
And we can even take it a step further, because A and B talk about a married couple, one of the spouses could file the homestead. So if in this case, exact same facts, but in 2008, instead of a divorce, they separated, did a legal separation, and before they did, she files the homestead. He doesn't have to. One spouse can. I think that covers them now. So the linchpin here is just the divorce.
But aren't they doubling up the homestead now?
No. What I'm saying is, under the section we just looked at, it says one of the spouses can file a homestead. So, in 2008, they're married, they're not getting along. If the wife filed the homestead, it protects the property, and it protects him. The only difference is he moves out because they're separated. He shouldn't be punished in this scenario just because there's a divorce as opposed to a separation.
Counsel, let's back up.
Wait a moment.
Go ahead and finish.
I just want to finish the math on that, because if he had, if they were each separate, each would have a $550,000 homestead, correct?
No. There's case law out of Nevada that most of its bankruptcy appellate panel or in the bankruptcy court that clearly say, one, two people can't double up on a homestead. That's the Lennox case. I think it's 58BR. That was tried. There's also a case, Roe, that was mentioned by opposing counsel that two people can't claim two homesteads. So there is no doubling up. That's not allowed. And those cases specifically say you can stack exemptions but not the homestead exemption.
Okay.
So that's a non-issue. My point is the only difference here in my I'm sorry, Judge, if you wanted to.
No, please continue.
The only difference here is in my hypothetical, if she filed the homestead while they were married, the property's protected. If he separated and left and was living in an apartment, he still, under the law, would be able to claim the homestead exemption. The only difference is they got a divorce. And the divorce shouldn't be the linchpin that destroys the homestead.
But the divorce severs the community. You know, when that happens, there's no more community property, and there are tenants in common. They're just like strangers, two strangers at that stage, you know, like that.
Marriages end, families don't. He still has his family living there. So what we've got is just a divorce saying, okay, you have no right to this homestead. Whereas if we allow him to have the homestead, and I know this is a unique set of facts, and I know the court is afraid to set law that people are going to push. And to allay those fears, the court doesn't have to publish the decision, or they could limit it to this situation where a dad has allowed his children to live there.
Well, it's actually a certified question, so we kind of do have to publish it.
And under those terms, too, I think the court has the authority to reword or change the wording of the question, and maybe that's more appropriate. But what we're saying here is, under the plain language of the statute, if we want to use that, it doesn't require a single person to reside there. We look at 2C. It doesn't. It says use and intend to claim as a homestead. That's what he's basically done. Let the children use it, and he intends to claim it. So if we want to use the plain language, and it's not artfully worded.
So does he lose his homestead exemption when they achieve majority?
I would say yes.
And so
how does that happen? What comes vanishes?
I wish it was that easy, but
it sort of sounds like it. I mean, the linchpin for his right to declare the homestead are the children. If the children attain the age of 18 or 20 or whatever, or maybe 40, I don't know what the age is, the homestead vanishes?
Well, here's the point. That's why it would happen. He's concerned about not uprooting his children, changing schools, and living in a worse area. So, and I know you understand that, but when they become 18, that's not as big a concern. And if he had no children, he wouldn't have waited 5 years. He would have sold it right away.
But where are you writing in the exception, the child exception? I hear you writing in an exception that sounds like if you have minor children residing, you still get another chance to do what you could have, would have, should have done before you got divorced.
Well, that's not correct, Judge, because if you didn't do it, you would be looking at the same result if he had filed the homestead, because you're saying if he moves, he doesn't get it. So if he had filed it and moved out, he still wouldn't, he would break that nexus if we're going to base it on residing. I'm saying the nexus isn't broken because the kids are still live there, they're dependents. The homestead isn't intended to protect the family from calamities. What type of calamities? Well, death, medical bills, divorce, and now we're going to use that calamity of divorce to destroy the homestead.
And 5 years after the fact.
I'm sorry, what?
5 years after the fact.
Right. For 5 years, he's cared more about his kids living there than his own living arrangement, living in a beat-up travel trailer. And he's getting punished for that for not pushing it. He could have pushed it and said, give me my half, the heck with everybody.
Counsel, doesn't, over on this side, I understand our acoustics bounce around, there was a divorce decree that provided that the wife or ex-spouse would reside through her property with the children until sold, and it was to be listed for sale on July 1, 2008. So I gather during this pendency, the property was up for sale, so it wasn't like he was just allowing the family to stay there. Was it up for sale or not? Is that a misquote out of the record? Or?
I don't think they ever put it up for sale.
Because that's what the court sent to order.
Right.
The family court.
Right. And he didn't push it. And he's being penalized for not pushing it.
Or non-complying, non-compliance with the court order.
But if it's the, both parties not complying, are they really not complying?
But aren't we, as we're talking about homestead exemptions, aren't they creatures of statute, whatever the legislature giveth? So if you can help us out, can you give us some state that goes in the direction we're trying to push us?
I go back to the statute itself, 115.020. It doesn't require a single person to reside there, but when it talks about married people, it talks about residing.
But we're stuck with that fact. He is no longer married.
Right.
So if we have that fact, we remove it from this equation. Now we have this new equation. So we have to read it that way. And as you said, if he doesn't have to reside there, okay, I accept that. But the statute also requires that he be married to get this benefit. He's no longer married. So I have these two situations of factual relevance to take into consideration. How do I accept one and not the other?
Well, a single person can get a homestead. And to address one of your earlier questions about whether or not you could homestead it after, I don't think that is a question. I think it's clear in the Zoner case, former bankruptcy judge Jones said Matley basically put that to rest. And Zoner, Ms. Zoner, filed, executed and declared her homestead and filed it after filing bankruptcy. And Judge Jones clearly said that doesn't invalidate the claim of the homestead. So at this point, if you were to allow him that claim, he can go declare the homestead.
But you're asking us to allow it. And my question to you is, I'm looking for some guidance as to how to make it out of whole cloth, to be blunt.
Again, I go back to the statute. 115.020(2)(c) says, when made by any claimant under this section, that is this, their or his or her intention to use and claim the property as a homestead. That's all it requires for a single person, and that's what he's doing.
So, Mr. Burke, if I owned two pieces of residential property, one in Carson and one in Sparks, can I declare a homestead and file the declaration on the property in Carson, even though I reside in the one in Sparks?
Are you single or with a family?
Single.
I think what that turns on is when he files the homestead, where he's living at the time. But it seems as if the legislature allows a single person the choice. And you say, well, why would that be? Well, it makes sense. If we had a family and they had two houses, but one house is really a cabin that the dad liked to go hunting and fishing, the legislature is really probably protecting men from themselves, because the man would probably say, oh, let's protect the cabin with the hunting and the fishing. But the legislature is saying, no, if you've got a family, that's where you put your homestead. If you're single, it doesn't matter as much.
The basis for my hypothetical is your interpretation of subsection C. And I don't think that the legislature contemplated my having a choice of picking any residential property, say I own 3, 5, 7, whichever one I choose to put the declaration on.
But there has to be some kind of nexus. We talked about McGill earlier. The problem with McGill, they moved out of White Pine County to get a job in Reno. The son went to school in Reno. They had a renter in the house. And apparently, McGill said, well, if I lose my job, I plan to move back to White. We don't have that here. We had Mr. Nielsen or his blood has resided there for the last 18 years. He's not gotten any other homestead. You can say, well, he's living in a trailer. That's not realistic. He could be living in an apartment. That's not what this is.
I was just thinking that your best argument in this case, if there isn't a child nexus, is that subsection C affords a single person the right of choice. When is the intention expressed as to when I declare the homestead? At the time I declare it or at some future time? And perhaps the reason he never sold the house is because at some point in time he hopes to get the house back from his ex-wife. I don't know. But
I don't know how he could when the divorce says it's split.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason he's not there is because of the divorce decree.
Yeah.
And again, I would just close with the fact that it's an unusual situation, but I don't think we're rewriting the statute allowing him this exemption. I would ask that he be allowed this claim of exemption to prevent what he's been trying to prevent 5 years, uproot the family.
Actually, I rather suspect that this isn't an unusual situation. I suspect that there's a lot of divorced families where one spouse remains in the home with the child or children.
But it's unusual, if they could. It's just unusual in the sense that he hasn't pushed to sell it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to respond just to a couple of issues. First of all, there has been some concern expressed about this forced sale of the house, and are we going to do something to displace the family because Mr. Murth prevails on his argument the family has to move. Well, the decision to put the house up for sale and possibly force the sale of the house and displace the family was made by the husband and the wife when they entered into their marital settlement agreement that said it's going to be put on the market in July or June of 2008. Secondly, I'd like to focus on the statute 115.020 and the question about whether subpart 2C provides a different standard for single, and I don't think it does. Because when you read 2C, it says when made by any claimant could be single or married, that it is his or her intention to use and claim the property as a homestead, because we know the homestead requires three things, basically: that you reside there, that you file a declaration, and that you intend to claim it as your homestead. That's all 2C is doing, is making sure that the people are declaring that that's the property they want as their homestead.
Couldn't you argue that the statute says, when it says it's his or her intention, that is present looking forward normally,
yes,
to use and claim the property as a homestead, that is he wants to use that for his children to live, and that that's a homestead use of that property in a forward-looking way until the children graduate or come of age? And that's a whole other problem about how do you have something that exists and then goes away.
Yes.
But why is that not a reasonable reading of that statute?
Because, Your Honor, I think if you look at 2A and 2B, that's the provision that says that there has to be the residency in the first place. In order to get the right of the homestead, you have to be residing there, and also say that's the property I intend to declare as my homestead. It's a two-part requirement. And when you look at 2A and 2B, yes, the language is different. If you read it on its face value, it appears that if you're a husband and wife, you have to say you're residing, but it doesn't say anything about when you're single. But when you look at 2A, when made by a married person or persons, that they or either of them are married, or if not married, that he or she is a householder. Householder really has the same meaning. I did a little research in the Nevada cases that would describe or define householder, and I had to go back to 1909 to find a case, and it dealt with sureties. But under the law of sureties, there was the requirement that there be a householder or a freeholder, and there was a situation in which one of the sureties was a single man living in the property with servants, I believe. And regarding that, the Nevada Supreme Court said that householder is synonymous with housekeeper, which is defined by Bouillier to be one who keeps house. He further says, in order to make a party the party a housekeeper, he must be in actual possession of the house. Then they go on to the definition of a householder with Mr. Burrell, which is a dictionary I've not seen, defines a householder to be the occupier of a house.
What's the site on that case, Mr.
Burrell? The site, Your Honor, is 31 Nevada, 348. It's a 1909 case. And by the way, the definition of householder from the dictionary is the exact same definition from Black's Law Dictionary as well. So I think even though the language in 2A and 2B is different on its face, in substance and purpose, it's the result is the same. That is a single person, householder, reside, 2B, married couple, residing in the property. And therefore,
then why have A and B? Why not just have A?
Your Honor, I almost have to imagine that with the machinations that the legislature goes through, modifying these statutes instead of starting from scratch sometimes, which I think would be better, they try to take the language that is there.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, I want to thank both of you for your briefing and argument. We appreciate it very much, and the case shall stand submitted and will be in recess.